Hello, Caleb.
How's it going tonight?
It's going quite well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've got my cold drink here in my hand. It's nice.
What are you drinking this evening?
Tonight I am with a Negroni.
A Negroni. Oh, very nice. Very classy.
A little bitter, a little sweet. It's quite nice.
Excellent. I am.
What about you?
I am partaking of an old fashioned here. Although I do have an ice cube in my glass, so it might clink around a little bit. I didn't actually take that into account. So.
That'll just add to the ambiance of the podcast, I think. All right, so one of the things that we talked about last week was license plates. And apologies to our listeners who are not in California. This does not apply to you. But what did we find out about license plates? Do you need a front license plate?
The word on the street is that you do need a both front and rear license plate in the state of California. Although, as we did learn earlier, a couple years ago from the Steve Jobs saga, is that you apparently have 6 months. Is it 6 months from the time you get a new vehicle to the time you need the plates?
Yes, that is apparently the grace period that the California DMV gives new car owners. And so Steve Jobs would lease a vehicle, and then when 6 months would come up, Mercedes of Palo Alto would send him a new car so he could skirt the issue. So he was not infringing. He was simply bending the rule to his liking. I just find that amazing. And I'm sure the sales rep at Mercedes loved having him as a client, always needing a fresh Mercedes.
I can't tell if that's awesome or obnoxious or both. I don't know. It's amazing, though.
I think that is one of the things you can do when you're extremely rich and you're Steve Jobs, which is pretty cool.
It's a hacker thing, right? You're hacking the system.
Definitely hacking the system. So we talked about the Model 3 wait line experience and the announcement last week. Well, I guess when we recorded, we released this a lot later than we recorded it. But now we are in the afterglow of the Model 3 unveil. And how many reservations are we up to now officially?
I was going to ask you that question. Why don't you field that? It's been what, a fortnight since the reservation started. What is the total at?
Yes. So the official number from Elon Musk and Tesla is 325,000 reservations for the Model 3. From both the web and the in-store folks. We got a few updates in the preceding days to that official announcement. And it kind of shocked people, I think, when it was initially that 110 on the launch night. And even Elon had said that they weren't expecting it to keep up at that fervor of a pace. And within a couple of days, they had gotten up to 325,000 reservations. And as of even yesterday, a Tesla executive was giving a speech at an alternative energy conference and alluded to the number being quite a bit higher, almost 400,000. So air quotes, that's still speculation. It's not an official number yet, but even at 325,000, that would be, as Elon had tweeted, an implied $14 billion in implied future sales. And even if you just count the actual cash on their balance sheet, that's an extra $325 million in the Tesla balance sheet. So that's got to feel pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just an amazing amount of money to process in what, 2 weeks?
$325 million? In a couple days. Yeah. From the launch to when they made that final announcement was basically Thursday or Friday to Wednesday. So just a few days, four or five days.
And so they're going to be sitting on what, 325 million for a year and a half at least?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about what the SEC regulations are or what the GAAP accounting regulations are actually on that money, because it's actually a liability. Like, it has to be treated as a liability since it's refundable. So I think they'll probably use it, and they probably have some models around how much they feel comfortable utilizing in their daily operations. You know, they must have some model about how much they expect people to want refunds, since all that money is refundable. That's the reason why it's not really sales. both because it's not the $35,000 purchase price, but also because that $1,000 is fully refundable. So while they, yes, they have that money on their balance sheet and they have that cash available, it's a little bit like a friend asking you to hold some money for them. you could spend it, but it's a little bit risky.
But it's not as formal as having to hold it in escrow somewhere.
That's true. Yeah. It's not super official. There's not a super lengthy process, apparently. You just have to email them and they'd give you the refund. So, I mean, they have my thousand. I mean, what were you expecting? Did you have any sense of how many reservations would be coming from the Model 3?
I don't know that I had a model in my head, but I certainly did not expect 325,000. I mean, that's crazy. Just to think that many people have $1,000 sitting around that they just don't need for the next 2 years is not crazy, but interesting. That's certainly an interesting data point.
Yeah, I was expecting them to come out with a big announcement of 100,000 reservations after a week. And so it tripled that, and there were 100,000 in the first under 12 hours. So I feel like it definitely surpassed what my expectations were, and I was someone who actually went and made a reservation. But when we got there and saw that there were 100 people already in line, it was pretty clear that this was bigger than I had originally anticipated. And obviously more than Tesla anticipated as well, because there were many tweets flying from Elon about not expecting that much demand, needing to increase production. And a lot of that stuff was probably somewhat in jest, but certainly a serious number of reservations and unparalleled in terms of car sales for sure. And, you know, right up there with other major product launches for video games and iPhones and things like that. Like, I don't know anyone else who's lined up for the next version of the BMW 3 Series, for instance.
So how does this compare to previous Tesla launches?
Yeah, so I did a little bit of digging and reminded myself that the Model S apparently had 12,000 reservations when it exited the pre-order period.
What was a reservation? Like, was it $1,000? Was it the same sort of $1,000 down payment, or was it something else?
It was actually higher. It was $5,000 deposit for the Model S, and actually an even higher number for Signature Series. So they did a special thing with the Model S and Model X, and people actually expected they would do it with Model 3 until Tesla said they wouldn't. And they had this special edition called the Signature Series, which was basically you're going to get the most decked out version of the car, and you would give $40,000 to the purchase price as a deposit. And
so it's like, you know, the Eddie Bauer version of the Subaru Outback, but
yeah, exactly,
fancier.
Like the super fancy version, and like you're going to get the car sooner, and you've got more skin in the game, as evidenced by being able to spot Tesla $40,000 for a few years. So the Model S had 12,000 reservations, and the Model X had around 24,000. So wildly smaller reservation numbers, and that was over their entire lifetime. It seems very possible that they'll get to 500,000 reservations by the time that the first Model 3 actually ends up shipping. And that's just pretty incredible. Now, the big difference, obviously, is that the price point of the Model 3 is much lower than the Model S and the Model X, and appealing to a much wider customer base. But I think there was certainly skepticism in the auto press and even in just sort of the broader press that there's always been a criticism that Tesla makes very expensive cars, and they're for the rich, and they're sort of toys, and that, you know, they may want to try and walk in here and make a mass market car, but they won't do it and people won't be that interested. And that sort of rhetoric seemed to permeate the undertone of many of these stories that came out in the past couple of weeks, where people are just super shocked at how many people came out and made a reservation. It's just sort of super surprising to me, actually, that so many people, reporters, underestimated the demand for the Model 3, because they're benchmarking against regular EV sales. And I think they're wrong to benchmark against EV sales. I think they should have been benchmarking against entry-level luxury cars. And when you benchmark against those, these numbers make a lot more sense.
It's maybe for like year-long sales, though, but these are the numbers that luxury brands sell in an entire year that they've just put up for reservations here, right? Like this, what kind of volume are like their competitors dealing with here?
Yeah, so like BMW 3 Series does about 140,000 cars a year. The C-Class does like 86,000. And like the A4 is actually pretty small. The Audi is like 30,000. These are all US. And that was like 2015. So they did more than BMW does in a year in that week in pre-orders. But the question is like, so for someone like me, I don't have a car right now. So I wasn't in the normal buying process, and I'm not currently in the normal buying process. So I'm not quite sure how much of these are upgrades versus just the normal buying process, but it's certainly a pretty big feat, because what you can look to is the number of reservations that they've taken for the Model S and X. The Model S is still growing, even though the reservations they took were only, you know, 10,000 or so, 12,000. So they're selling more Model S's now than the total reservations for many years. So I think that bodes really well for the Model 3 as well, that, you know, that once it's actually out there and people start seeing these everywhere, like if you're in an area that has Model S's right now, holy you're going to start seeing a metric ton of these Model 3s cruising around the streets. So
it's like really, every Prius really you see, numbers. Imagine that it becomes a Tesla.
Well, yeah, and I think it's going to be, imagine the majority of the model, of the 3 Series and the A4s and the C-Classes you see are going to become Teslas in metropolitan areas for sure.
Do you think that it's going to be, so those are the standard luxury performance ultimate driving machine type vehicles, but those are, once you start getting down to 35,000, you're starting to also get into the range of the Prius and the Nissan Leaf and other cars that have a base price that's getting up to around 35,000. And then there might be some government credits that bring that price down a bit. But there's also this, those aren't luxury cars necessarily. Those are more common cars, bourgeois cars, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever the term would be for them. But it's sort of sitting right in between those two.
Yeah, I think that there's, I think Elon said it pretty well in the presentation, of that their goal is to make the best car for $35,000 possible. And that many of the EVs that are out there today are pretty average vehicles, but they're slightly more expensive, but they get the handicap of having the credit. Where even at $35,000, I think that the Model 3 is a very compelling car for someone who is considering a BMW or an A4. And especially if you're looking at a decked out Camry or, you know, a lower price starting at $20,000 car at the higher end, like a Passat or something. I think they'll also steal a fair number of people who are in that range. I mean, a four-door car that is in $35,000 price range is very, very close to the U.S. average price of around $32,000 or $35,000 average price. Now, obviously, many of those averages are being pulled up by supercars and really high-end cars. But I think a really the way I've been thinking about it, at least, is looking at the Model S and what the Model S did to the large luxury sedan market. And right now, the Model S is the best-selling single car in the luxury car market, luxury large car market. So of all the cars that the Model S competes with, it is better-selling and growing, and all of those other cars are actually shrinking. And if that continues, if that trend continues, when the Model 3 is released, Tesla will become a very, very large car maker very quickly, and it's going to be stealing share because most people have a car who are going to buy a car. And so this isn't just like new additions to the world of car ownership. especially at this price point. They're going to be stealing from BMW, Audi, Mercedes, and like you mentioned, some of these smaller car makers. Well, not smaller car makers, the non-luxury car brands.
Right. Sort of the high end of the lower models as well as the lower end of the high models, I guess.
Yeah, and I think eventually they'll just keep bringing that price point down and down and down, because the majority of the price of the vehicle for Tesla is the battery packs. And luckily, it's not as strong as Moore's Law in silicon of, you know, sort of doubling in capacity every 18 months and having in price. But it's still a solid 8 to 10% improvement in the battery performance each year. And so that means that eventually they'll be able to have very high kilowatt battery packs at a much lower cost and have extremely performant vehicles at a $20,000 price point. And when they get there in 5 or 6 years from the Model 3, it's going to be sort of a super interesting situation, because it will be more price competitive to have a EV than it will be to have a gasoline, you know, internal combustion engine car. And I haven't heard that many people talking about that. Some of the people who are really good on the analysis are talking about that. But this, I think a lot of people still doubted whether or not Tesla would actually be able to come out with a car at this price point. And there's still a lot of doubters as to whether or not they'll actually ship it at $35,000. And I think that they will. I think that that will be the base price. I think most people will option it up to $45,000 or so. But that doesn't matter. The base price is also the base price for all these other cars. Like the 3 Series, for instance, average selling price is $42,000, even though they start at $30,000-ish. The C-Class also is $42,000 average. The Audi A4 is $39,000 average. So they're right in the sweet spot for these 3 Series C and A4. So, I mean, I guess my question to you is, like, do you think that someone who's buying a 3 Series today would be interested in a Model 3, even if they don't care about electric?
Well, it's interesting. The BMW 3 Series has always been performance-oriented. They've got the ultimate driving machine marketing, and then the whole history, the at least like 3 or 4 decades of history of focusing on driver enjoyment and performance. So I'm not sure. I mean, the Tesla does deliver that. They have the performance benefits inherent in having a high torque electric motor system. As long as they keep the weight of the batteries down, they get pretty good performance, or great performance, I guess. Pretty good might be underselling it quite a bit. But it'll be interesting to see how BMW in the next year or two comes closer to Tesla in the areas that Tesla is strong, such as autopilot and basically all of the technology features, especially since BMW had so many challenges with their iDrive system and the stuff that they've been delivering, and that weird gesture interface that they're working on. It'll be interesting to see how the traditional car companies meet Tesla as much as Tesla is trying to meet the traditional car companies.
Yeah, I think that, so I used to have a BMW, and I hate having to say that, but I think it's useful for this. It's like, it was a 2006, so it wasn't anything super special. But I got that because I do enjoy driving. I do enjoy having a more sporty feel when I'm driving, because I don't drive that much. I liked the luxury nature of it, but I didn't want a Mercedes or Audi, because I wanted something that was positioned as sporty, and for better or worse, that it worked on me. The marketing worked on me, and I got that car, and I really enjoyed it. But I didn't particularly care that it was a gasoline car. I didn't have any romance around it being an engine in front of me, making all these tiny explosions propelling me down the highway. So I'm extremely excited by the idea of a car that has far less moving parts, that is far more reliable, and just has electronics at its core. I mean, being in the technology industry, I'm just so much more excited by the idea that this car is actually run on software instead of purely hack together software. And I feel like the advantages that a BMW or Audi or Mercedes has in vehicle development is reduced to primarily production expertise and marketing, because their drivetrain work, their engine work, that's useless in the context of an electric vehicle. And so what is most interesting to me about the amount of pre-orders that happen for the Tesla Model 3 are so many people want Tesla's version of this vehicle, and not even having seen it, want what Tesla has to offer. And that is like the truest embodiment of a brand, where you truly trust that what this company is going to deliver is something that you want, and you want to get behind it. And I think there's a lot of people who made that reservation who don't care that it's electric. They just are excited that it's a Tesla, and that Tesla is cool, that Tesla has this aura of being the future of cars, that they have a car that is voted one of the best sedans in the world by many traditional auto magazines, that they make a car that's faster than the Ferrari Enzo and all these crazy supercars, and it's in a sedan that can carry seven people. It's just this asymmetric competition where having electric motors and batteries and computers and software allow the car to be amazing to begin with and continue to improve. And oh, by the way, it can also drive itself. I just don't think that the expertise and skills inside of an Audi or Mercedes are necessarily prepared for competing with someone like Tesla. And if anything, I would have loved to be in the boardroom or even just in a meeting room at BMW the day after on April 1st. Can you imagine being in there and they're just like, so did you see what happened with the Tesla Model 3? Because it reminds me of the iPhone. And I'm sure a lot of people have been bringing this up, but BlackBerry and Nokia did not believe that that was true. They did not believe that the iPhone was real. They didn't think it was going to be possible. And they did not believe that people would actually buy it or that it would work, that they had all this expertise. And those same tropes seem to be popping up with the motoring industry, that no one's just going to waltz right in here and produce an electric car that millions of people want. And I think the Model 3 is the first indication that it's not just for super rich people. It's just a car that people want. It's just better. And that's super exciting.
Do you think that the traditional manufacturers are hung up on, they think that their expertise is defensible when it's actually being routed around? Like, for instance, the transmission of cars is mind-blowing to me. Like, it just blows my mind that this even works. And then you've got the motors, which where they've gotten like so efficient over time, and there's just all of this like iteration that happens to get these internal combustion engines to, like you said, like these tiny little explosions happening like over and over again, and somehow this all works. And it is actually a technological marvel that it even works at all. But it's all irrelevant when you switch to an electric motor that is completely simple and has a battery power source or some sort of electric power source, whether it's battery or whatever might come after batteries. But all of the expertise around transmissions, around drivetrain, well, the whole drivetrain, the internal combustion engine, like all of that is moot. And surely that factors very heavily in their like 5-10 year projections of, I'm sure they have extremely long projections as to what their model lines will be. And do they have that false confidence that Steve Ballmer had when he was mocking the $500 iPhone?
From what I can see from the outside, and I'm obviously not an automotive executive, but the way they talk about electric cars seems to be, at least to me, dismissive. Those are not real cars. Those are for commuters or for city people or for millennials. And if you want a real car, you're going to buy a Camry. Or if you want a real car, you're going to buy a Chevy Cruze. And we produce real cars here at this company. But, you know, just to hedge our bets, we produce some EVs. And we also produce some EVs because the government tells us that doing so will be mandatory soon. And we want to still keep selling these crazy SUVs that get 14 miles to the gallon. So that 100 miles per gallon sounds pretty good when we blend it into our fleet average. if these companies keep thinking about them as electric vehicles versus gasoline vehicles, that will be their fundamental flaw. They're just vehicles. I think that if you look to this, you know, the concept of jobs to be done, the idea that I'm going to be driving around in a vehicle, me as a consumer, if the charging is solved, and for a lot of people, charging at home is not a problem. For apartment dwellers, there's a separate issue. But if you have access to a plug at home, having gas station at your house all the time is great. That's not a disadvantage. And that if you commute to work, at least in the US, the vast majority of commuters are within 60 miles of their home. Like 98% of people, according to like the Department of Transportation, are within 60 miles round trip. So you are no way going to drain the battery on a Model 3 if you're just commuting to work every day. So the competition is not against EVs. The competition is just against cars. And I think Tesla showed that a lot of people are just interested in what Tesla's vision of the car is. And that's, I think, the biggest flaw for these big companies is how are they going to make the transition? And their dealers, you know, the fundamental thing that dealers make the majority of their profit off of service means there's a disincentive for them to actually want to sell electric cars, because they're going to smarten up pretty quick and realize every electric car we sell, we decrease our profit in the future dramatically. So we should be selling gasoline cars. And consumers don't give a about that. They want a really high quality car. So I think that I have yet to see a traditional automaker convince me that they understand how dire the situation is and how quickly things are going to shift for them in terms of electric cars. And that's going to be the really fascinating thing to watch over the next year and a half, is who has a legitimate product that they're actually trying to compete with their own cars. I don't think any of the car makers are yet competing with their own cars with their electric entrance. And Tesla doesn't have that baggage, so they have the advantage.
It's interesting that all of the other vehicles that you mentioned, the Audi, the Mercedes, the BMW, we're talking about Porsches, those are, and I mean, I guess we also mentioned Ferraris, but I was going to say German, but they're all European vehicles. Other comparables might be like a Lexus or an Infiniti, Japanese vehicles. And this is, you don't see Tesla playing the made in the USA card all that much right now, but it very much is a made in the USA product. Do you think that's affecting the amount of reservations they're getting in the U.S.?
I am not buying it because it's American. I have a lot of products from all over the world, but that's not a huge turn on for me particularly. I've heard anecdotes from the forums that some people are who they spoke to in line or themselves are excited about finally being able to buy an American car. But I do think that that's something they will play up as they think about what their advertising campaign will be in the future. They currently don't advertise in any meaningful way. I think maybe not even at all. And I say advertising very discreetly from marketing. It bothers the heck out of me when people say, we do no marketing. They mean to say we do no advertising. Tesla does an extremely good job at marketing. They currently choose not to advertise. So it's a weird pedantic thing that I care about a lot. But I think when they do advertising, they're going to push the safety angle. And I think they'll push the Made in America angle. And I think they'll push the reliability angle, because those are things that American car companies have struggled with for a very long time. And the reason they lost to overseas manufacturers. And you know, even the fact that like they build their motors to a million mile specification is incredible. Like, we haven't even seen what the resale values are going to be on these vehicles beyond a few years. I mean, we know what Model S's go for, and I've looked at a couple of them, and they're still really expensive. And that's because they hold up their value really well, because they just don't break down. Like, they're just great. Like, it's super exciting to think about, because what that means is that the actual lease payments for these sorts of vehicles from Tesla could be materially lower than what they would be for a BMW 3 Series or an Audi A4, because the residual value will be much higher. And I haven't heard anyone talk about that yet. But even for an exactly same spec'd out car that's $35,000, if the lease payment for a Model 3 is materially lower by 50, 60, 70 bucks because the residual value is higher at the end, that's huge. I mean, that's a massive, massive change if the car payment goes from $300 a month to $250 a month. That brings it into the class of way more people being able to afford it. And for no other reason than the car is actually has a much more useful, longer life. There's so many more things to unpack about what the Model 3 is able to do compared to its rivals that are basically all the same sort of car with different badges.
Yeah, it's interesting that the vehicle with the over-the-air software updates too, the vehicle changes itself and improves similar to how we've grown accustomed to our iPhones or other devices getting the latest software updates and becoming more functional than they were when we bought them. And it's interesting to think that, like, you know, Elon sends out a tweet and announcing that Tesla is sending out autopilot to all the Model S owners or something. And your car is getting more features as it sits in your possession than when you bought it. That's unheard of.
That has to be just making the traditional car makers go nuts, because they've been trying to stick in LTE as a feature and upsell and OnStar and all these things into traditional cars as a premium feature that you have to pay extra for as a way to increase their profit margin. And then Tesla comes along and says, we're going to include an LTE radio in all of our cars, and it's just there. And we're doing it because we think making the car more valuable over time and more useful is going to be better for our customers. And that's an easy situation to be in when you started with zero sales. So I mean, that's true. It definitely makes it difficult for these other car companies to compete with that. But I don't think they're just doing it for the goodness of their heart. They want to do it because it makes the car more valuable compared to these other vehicles. And if you start with a clean sheet of paper, that makes way more sense that the car would actually be able to improve. And, you know, the fact that they have a massive touchscreen in the center takes a lot of cues from the iPhone, where manual buttons are not reprogrammable, but a touchscreen is. And what's funny, though, is that all the other modern new cars are also fly-by-wire. They're all electric controlled anyways. Right. They just don't have a unified system. And that's the thing that I personally don't think these car companies are going to be able to compete with. I don't think they're going to be able to compete with the integration. I don't think they're going to be able to compete with the software side of things. I don't think they fully understand all the details of the niceties that the Tesla has and how thoughtfully designed it is. And that while the Tesla leather might not be as nice as the BMW, or the styling might not be as beautiful as a Maserati, that the actual daily use and thoughtfulness of the Tesla and its ability to improve at the drop of a software update is wildly more interesting to people. That if I buy my car today, it's going to get better over time versus worse, is an entirely new thing for the car industry, but an extremely common idea in technology in general. And Tesla, it just continually reminds me that Tesla is a technology company more than a car company. And when you view it through that lens, it becomes so much more interesting to think about what they're doing. They're trying to get this hardware into the hands of people and then improve it over time versus a car company, a traditional car company, which bundles all their changes up for a new model year to try and get you to buy it again. Now, will this happen to Tesla in 10 years? I don't know. I don't really care yet. But right now, it's super fascinating to watch.
Well, I'm sure all our cars will be flying in 10 years, right? Like, that's we're guaranteed that.
Oh my gosh. Flying cars, like, it's funny because I love the idea of a flying car from the movies and the idea of it, but I am always nervous driving on the roads with regular people driving in two-dimensional space. So the idea of driving with someone in three-dimensional space really scares me. I think autopilot would need to be extremely good for that to be useful.
Yeah, personally, I think you can tell a lot about a person by whether they view flying cars as a dystopian future or an optimistic future. And I'm definitely in the former camp.
Yep, I tend to agree.
All right, so that's pretty cool. Let's you want to wrap this up for this episode? We've got a bunch of things to drill into, but we can save that for the future when we have flying cars.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be able to have another episode before then, but just at the end, I just wanted to thank everyone who had given us feedback on the first episode in all the different channels, and for listening and for subscribing. You know, we're new to podcasting, but we're just big fans and super excited to talk about this. And we would be talking about it anyway, so it's kind of fun to share. And so if you have feedback, feel free to let us know about it. And yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, definitely. So what would be the best way for people to give us feedback if they have feedback?
To tweet at us at the Tesla Show on Twitter. All right. Talk to you later, Mike.
All right. See you, Caleb.